Fanatic.net podcast number 288, where we're going to start with the unexplainable mixed amalgamation of motorsports mayhem. NASCAR's rewritten the definition of silly season, and in F1, the eye turns to safety, or so we're led to believe. In IndyCar, the 500 adds a new presenting sponsor, and Sage Karam returns, bringing some monkeys along for the ride. And we're going to preview a little bit of the Daytona 24-hour race. This is Open Paddock, Part 2. I'm your sometimes host, maybe host, kind of host, John the race fan. And I've got Mike Shaw. We're changing things up a little bit. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, it's good to have a second night of this, kind of split it up so we don't stay up all hours doing it in one night. We can kind of change it around a little bit. But hey, you know, all these tin tops and open wheel stuff, this is more your forte. So granted, I follow it, but not quite to the detail you do. So I'm happy to hand off the intro and the primary focus of this to you. So,
well, we were hoping to have Tom Firth tonight with us again, but he had some other commitments. His knowledge and understanding puts me to shame. So,
there's always something to aspire to, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So. Aspiring to be a college student with time. There you go. That's.
Hey, can I do that when I grow up?
Exactly.
So, all right. Let's talk about shall we?
This is getting ridiculous.
It is, isn't it? So the big stupid elephant in the room is what NASCAR did.
I was going to say, is once again NASCAR?
Okay. So NASCAR is trying, you know, they have this whole chase system, elimination, playoff elimination type of thing for the Sprint Cup series, which is like their top level series. And then they've decided that they're going to implement that also in the Xfinity, formerly Nationwide, formerly Busch series, as well as the Trucks series.
Great. Well, because it was such a big success, right? With the top level Sprint Cup?
Somebody thinks so.
You know, because it wasn't the fact that, you know, Jeff Gordon's final race or any other reason to watch that final, you know, the lead up there. No.
Look,
it was all about the fact that they had this this playoff setup, right?
Your 2015 NASCAR Sprint Cup champion missed a full third of the season because he broke his foot or broke his leg, foot and his leg, I think. I mean, I let that sink in. He missed a third of the season and he's the champion.
And did he win all of the races or get like top five the rest of the entire season?
No.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, this whole playoff thing, I don't know. I think we're all in agreement that it's really the antithesis of what should be a motorsports series championship, right? Well, NASCAR, in their way to just completely pull away from anything that is racing, in the truck series, they have introduced the what is it, the countdown clock, the caution countdown, I forget what it is. Basically what it is they're going to throw a caution at 20 minutes if there hasn't been a caution period, whatever.
Yeah, so, you know, I read a little
for
bit
20 minutes.
I read a little bit about this, and I just, first of all, I thought it was from The Onion. I mean, I thought it was like a joke making fun of NASCAR and their crazy gimmickry. And no. This is real.
You're not the only one who thought that.
So the basics, as you said, is that they have a 20-minute countdown from when the green flag drops, and if there isn't already another caution that happens in that 20 minutes, there'll be a mandatory caution that comes out, and they'll even hear a countdown to, or they'll know when it's going to happen, right?
Yes.
It's not like, you know, just instant yellow flags and race to the yellow kind of thing. It's like everybody kind of slows down together or something. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that NASCAR is doing for the 2016 season is, you know, they're getting away from analog gauges like they traditionally had, and they're doing a digital display race pack type of setup that gives them a lot more information. One of the pieces of information will be, I guess, the countdown until this next yellow flag.
Okay. So, you know, one of the things that I also read about this is, I mean, NASCAR themselves are saying that this is designed to create new strategies for the teams and give them, give more teams opportunity, I guess. The way that I personally saw it is, what's the difference between, or to me, the way this looks like is a series of, like, qualifying sprints, just the cars never leave the track.
Pretty much.
You know what I mean?
Well, okay. Here's what it's going to do. Because you have this sprint to a 20-minute point, teams are going to be scrambling to make up as many positions on track as they can within that 20-minute period, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if they need to change tires or refuel or, you know, adjust on the car, whatever, they do that under caution, and then you do it again, you know? It's like 20-minute, like you said, 20-minute sprint qualifications, you know, lather,
rinse, repeat. So I guess this is the age-old thing of, how do we force teams in an endurance event to go flat out the whole time?
Right.
It's that age-old thing that we keep seeing. This is nothing new in concept, as far as, you know, the idea of trying to find ways to force them to go fast, you know, to try and do it all out the whole time, instead of somebody managing their tires, managing their fuel, whatever, and then suddenly they're in the lead at the very end. But that's just smart strategy. This is endurance racing.
Well, one of the things that I think anybody and everybody has forgotten, and I haven't seen a NASCAR broadcast yet where somebody hasn't said, cautions breed cautions.
That was the next thing I was going to bring up. Yeah, I mean, I guess what you might end up having is, instead of those 15, 20 car pileups at the very end, there's only going to be 10 cars left.
Yeah. See, and that's how you generate the opportunities for the, you know, the lesser teams, the barely funded teams, you know. Realistically, though, the truck series is, you know, that's kind of where it's a feeder series into, you know, the next two levels, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. And you've got a lot of young, rookie, inexperienced drivers, and you're subjecting them to, you know, a whole lot of restarts, you know, under very competitive conditions. It really is a breeding ground for, you know, NASCAR style mayhem.
It is. And honestly, to me, it's like, why do this caution clock thing? And honestly, make the event a series of actual sprints then, and then have a point system accordingly. You could even make them heat races and, you know, readjust the field, and some people will actually fall off the back side of it. You know, it's like, we start with 40 cars. After that first short heat of 20 minutes, the back 10, you're not, you know, you don't get to keep going, you know, similar like, you know, qualifying or something. You know, and just keep doing that to the final 20-minute race or something like that, you know, with a little bit of time in between for them to, you know, do some setup changes on their car. because
if they're going to do elimination style, I think, and let me preface by saying in no way, shape or form would I condone this because it's horribly unsafe, but it would be grossly entertaining if they did an elimination style where after so many laps or so much time into the race, the last X number of positions, you just, shut them off as if they got hit with an EMP or something, you know, just shut off the, cause they're all computer controlled, fuel injection now.
Right.
Just shut off their car computer.
Or basically what you do is you just make them go into, pit speed mode.
No. Just, force it to dump the transmission into neutral. So they're all of a sudden they're freewheeling.
So you grenade the car?
Well, don't grenade it. Just shut it down.
I guess. I think I've done that, and there's some games that I remember playing years ago, that video games that were like that. It's like,
yeah,
there's an elimination thing. It's as you're driving along, yeah, it's like, oh, shoot, I've got to catch that next car. Otherwise, I'm not going to, it's going to be me that's eliminated and stuff. But,
yeah,
I can't foresee that happening due to the dangers. No. But, yeah, the whole idea of this caution clock, though, it's NASCAR as its gimmickiest they have ever been. Whoever thought of this needs to go away because it is so beyond ridiculous.
Crap like this makes the caution that's thrown for mysterious debris, it makes that look almost sensible, you know?
Yeah, just about. So. Debris. There's a water bottle that's not in the racing line and completely off in the infield. But
let's remember, Robbie Gordon tried that. He tore off roll bar padding and was throwing it out on the track to draw a caution. Roll bar padding.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, so this is going to be new for 2017 or 2016. They're going to try out the caution clock. Do you imagine this, if it's quote unquote successful, going beyond this, beyond the trucks?
You know, I'm wondering. We're only a few weeks away from the first race at Daytona. The outcry for this has been, I haven't seen anybody say anything positive. Let's put it that way.
Even on the I don't follow NASCAR followers or NASCAR news, but are those channels of people actually crying foul too?
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not deeply plugged into that segment, but from what I have seen, yes. Even the people who understand or claim to understand the thinking or the line of thinking behind, this caution clock thing, don't think it's a good idea,
Wow.
So. Yeah, we'll see. I wouldn't surprise me if this is one of those things that, even before the first race, they come back and say, yeah, we revisited this and don't think it's a good idea. So we'll see. If they do that, it makes me wonder if they're pulling a page from Bernie's playbook.
Sprinklers.
Speaking of sprinklers.
Yes. They were useful. Come on.
They were put to good use, yes, for wet weather tire testing. Was it Paul Ricard, I believe?
Yeah, I think that's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was wet weather tire testing. There's not really much to talk about because any times or anything are really irrelevant because it's number one, wet weather, and they're testing multiple compounds and you don't know who has what compound. So
And did they have to bring the previous generation engine? They couldn't use their new ones?
Yeah, it was all 2015 cars.
All right. So that means Honda blew up.
Well, yes, they did. But here's the thing.
That was just a guess.
What good is it to invite McLaren to drive their 2015
Come on, you need to know
piece
how the
of
cars
poop.
work at in a slower speed as well as the faster speeds, right?
The 2015 McLaren Honda, can you really say it works?
Well, see, you need to know how the tires work when it's being pushed.
Okay, fair enough. There you go.
I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you.
Test degradation rates while they're sitting in the garage on a lift.
I know they try and be fair to get as many, so many teams
I
out there that
heard,
can
yeah,
at least play. Because, I mean, in all honesty, even if it's the previous engine or whatever, I mean, you've got some setup stuff you can learn, right? For if you end up at a rainy track at some point, which is rare, but whatever.
Well, I heard the most recent FBC podcasts, and Grace made a great I had a great ideas. The teams they chose to do the wet weather tire testing are probably the teams that are going to complain the most, right? So
Probably.
let's placate them and get them in on the tire test. Makes sense. And yeah, McLaren would be one of those. So,
Certainly.
right. So, but yeah, the I think they got 98 laps out of the McLaren that was there for testing. Oops.
Well, that's actually more laps than I think they typically make that on that car.
That is a full
That's
race
an improvement, yeah.
so yeah, there you go. But didn't they also complete in they completed Circuit of the Americas and it was in the wet. Well, Button,
Partially,
I
yeah, it was
think.
drying conditions, but that was an awesome. That was best one of the year in my opinion. That was fun.
So yeah, there was that. The other thing that's coming down is the, Jean Todt and Bernie Ecclestone are supposed to be the saviors of Formula One, and they're wanting to implement changes. Well, Alex Wurz is also, he's the, what's the drivers group? Grand Prix Drivers Association, I think, GPDA, I think is what it's called.
Okay, yeah.
They're working, they obviously work with the FIA, and these are the standards. These are what we want to see from Formula One racing. Well, going forward, they're looking into two things for 2017. The first is Pirelli's tire strategy, which, let's be honest, it's not really Pirelli's tire strategy. It's the sanctioning body's strategy. Pirelli just makes the tires, right?
Right.
But the drivers want to have a tire where they can truly drive and put the car on that edge and really try to push the car to get everything out of it. Understanding that, yes, wear will be a part of that, but really have something where the drivers can try to compete as drivers, I guess is the best way to put it, as opposed to the degradation of the tire and the wear characteristics being the primary focus. How long am I going to be able to push on this compound of tire? Whereas they'd rather just be able to go out and push, and so that's one of the things that they're pushing for, it looking forward to 2017. The other big thing is that they also want, the FIA wants to look at s additional protective measures for the driver, specifically over the driver's head and the open cockpit.
Yeah, so there's a interesting design. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of it before. So it's the first time I'm really seeing it, but this thing called the Halo.
Right.
And it's a very interesting design where you've got actually a single aerodynamic pillar right in the very middle of the cockpit, just forward of the cockpit, going up high, and then with two wings that kind of come off of it, right, and cascade down back to the rest of the vehicle, and attach to the body. And the interesting thing is having that, that vertical piece being right in the very middle, the only place that would really obstruct the driver's view would be going on a straight,
right.
Which being, you know, having vision in two eyes, you can kind of see around it.
It would alter a little bit if you're looking a little bit shallow left or shallow right, from whichever eye is going to be looking directly at that, you know, fin-shaped piece.
Yeah, I think maybe the biggest challenge might be that, like you said, that little bit of view when you're like side by side with another car going into a corner, and you got kind of trying to do both, you know, look in front of you and look kind of to the side, and see where the other wheel is so you don't touch or something. That's probably going to be the biggest challenge. But overall, as far as designs go, it's one of the better ones that I've seen. It looks good.
Yeah, it's not a true closed cockpit. It just has this structure in place to help, you know, keep anything from entering, let's be honest, entering the driver's head, right?
Right. Yeah, you're right. The design is not a complete closed cockpit. It is open to the air. Some limited visibility maybe in those certain situations. Actually, I just thought of another interesting way to kind of describe how this thing looks. And it's like if you took the St. Louis Arch and you tilted it almost completely on its side with a single support in the middle. That's kind of what it looks like.
Pretty much.
That they're calling the Halo. And it's definitely going to look different, but it doesn't look closed cockpit for those people that don't like that idea and think that, well, you might as well be just a sports car at that point. It definitely still looks open wheel. It just looks different.
Yeah. I mean, it looks, at least theoretically, and I'm certainly no expert, but it looks like it will accomplish the goals of keeping debris, or at least larger debris, out of the cockpit, as well as protect the driver if, you know, something comes in contact with the top of the vehicle, whether it's, you know, they slide under a barrier or another car or go on their, go upside down or something like that.
Well, and as with a lot of these things, they're not designed to be necessarily a so hardened that they don't move, right? It's designed to deflect energy as the vehicle decelerates.
And, right.
I'm sure it's designed mainly with that in mind. So if it breaks in the process, but it takes away the energy and, you know, the driver ends up being okay, it did its job.
Exactly. And of course, this being the FIA, every open wheel racing series is keeping an eye on what they do and how well it performs. If this proves successful, if it comes into Formula One or any of the feeder series like GP2 or whatever, you could probably see this trickle down into IndyCar and Mazda Road to Indy and, who knows what else, you know, how far down.
Yeah. So you were talking earlier about the GPDA, the Drivers Association. So what have they said about this design so far themselves?
I haven't seen anything like any kind of official statement or anything like that, but every F1 news article, you got to kind of read between the lines a little bit. And regarding the cockpit protection, it really sounds to me like this is a design that the drivers felt comfortable with as far as the protection that it affords, but without providing any of the additional restrictions or potential safety issues like a truly closed cockpit or bubble canopy or, you know, fighter style canopy or anything like that might provide. That's not to say that's definitely, you know, this is exactly what the drivers want, but I think it may be a case of this is the best alternative out of what's out there and the safest option available.
All right. Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty good with the design. I think it looks all right. Be interesting to see, just how it performs, both from a safety aspect and from driver visibility aspect and whatnot. I can definitely see this end up spanning out all over different open wheel series everywhere.
Well, figure that the two biggest issues were with any kind of canopy in an open wheel car
Extraction.
are extraction and visibility.
Yep.
And
This one
this
solves
really proves,
extraction. There's no issue there, obviously.
sure.
Visibility looks like it would be a minimal impact from what I can tell, but that's a tough call.
One of the things that we have to remember too at the speeds, especially when you get at the top level of a Formula Series of like a Formula One or an IndyCar level, at the speeds they're going, any impact to visibility, no matter how small, is a big deal.
Oh
So
yeah,
that.
you miss seeing that corner entry by, a quarter of a second. You're off.
So. We'll see how it plays out. There's no definitive date of when these may be implemented, but that's what they're looking to implement in 2017, as I understand, or I'm sorry, in 2017. There you go.
All right, so moving on into other open wheel news.
IndyCar, there's news.
There's news!
Yay. And big news. The Indianapolis 500 mile race has a presenting sponsor in Pengrade Oil. Okay.
Oil company. Are you sure they realized the price of oil before they decided to jump in on this?
I don't know. I don't know nothing about that, but it's a $5 million deal for 3 years. And some of the A lot of longtime open wheel purists are showing some outrage at this, but let's be honest, it's the cost of doing business and the cost of hosting a race, even one as well attended and historic as the Indianapolis 500 is, profit margins are thin if they exist at all, right? So any means of bringing more to the table to help make it a better race or make it a better spectacle, that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Are they selling themselves short though with the price? I don't know. This whole presenting sponsor thing, I guess I don't remember them doing it before, but
They
all
never
right.
have. This is a first. There's never been any kind of title sponsor, presenting sponsor for the Indianapolis 500. So, is it worth more than what is it, 5 million over 3 years? Probably, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I still think I still am of the mindset that the way that Holman Company are operating, they're looking to sell thing, but they also just signed a 3 year deal with this oil company to be a presenting sponsor. So don't know. Don't know. But I think it's a good thing. I mean, I understand why people might be upset. Traditionalists are upset, but meh. Traditionalists are always upset when things change, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of the Indianapolis 500, Mr. Sage Karam has got not a shirt, but he has got a ride.
Okay.
He actually has a ride only for the Indianapolis 500 with a Dreyer Reinbold racing car sponsored by Gas Monkey Garage, that show on Velocity, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Richard
Well, that's
Rawlings.
interesting.
Now, have you watched the show at all? I mean, do you know anything about it?
I think back when I had Velocity, I saw a couple episodes here and there, and
Okay.
all right.
I mean, I like it because it's just general car guy stuff. Richard
With that
Rawlings,
reality TV flair, though, but
yeah,
whatever.
and let's be honest, Richard Rawlings is a very flamboyant personality. That makes him sound gay, which I don't think he is. But no, he's a very brash, bold personality, and I think that that's good. What's interesting? Okay, he not only okay. First of all, they're launching a Gas Monkey energy drink, and that's the sponsor on Sage Karam's car. But that the Gas Monkey Garage also sponsors a car in NHRA drag racing, I believe a funny car, might be pro stock. I mean, I'm not certain what kind of car. And they are also sponsoring a Viper in the GT class at the 24 Hours of Daytona this weekend.
Wow. Okay. Well, so they're definitely all in then.
Yeah. Okay. You make fun of Rawlings and their company, their brand or whatever, for being TV stars and whatever. They are gearheads and car guys first and foremost, and that's what they do for a living. So for them to take their success from, you know, flipping cars and doing what they do on TV and all of that, and to put some of that into motorsport is pretty good, because let's be honest, from a sponsorship standpoint, times is lean, brother. So I say bring it. Whether you like him or not, the fact that he's bringing money and putting his ugly monkey with a tongue hanging out logo on race cars, allowing them to run, that's a good thing.
No complaints here.
This has been something, you know, since we decided to, you know, record the podcast in two sections like this, this story has just kind of developed and evolved, and I believe it may have come to a culmination. I'm sure everybody enjoys low gas prices, right? I filled up for $1.29 a gallon the other day. Right. Unfortunately, if you are in the oil business, times are tough right now. Hartman Oil, which is one of the partners with Carpenter Fisher Hartman, it's affecting them pretty substantially, so much so that they're basically pulling out of their partnership deal with Sarah Fisher, who has aligned with Ed Carpenter to form their Alphabet Soup Racing team, right?
Right.
Well, as of today, just a few hours before we started, apparently an article in the Indy Star, I believe Kurt Cavan wrote, that they're splitting that team back up.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
How does that save money?
Well... At this point, I don't think it's a matter necessarily of saving money, as really without the additional funding from Hartman Oils, allowing both Sarah Fisher and Ed Carpenter to take their respective teams. And so this leaves New Garden's ride in question. Sarah Fisher's still hoping to keep sponsors together, to be able to have New Garden for a full season. But, yeah, times are tough.
Boy, that just really sucks considering how well they did last year.
They had a freaking awesome season last
year. They did. And New Garden especially, and, I can understand why, without getting one of those top other seats, why New Garden stuck with them. But damn, yeah, that's a kid you don't want, you know, falling out and not having a place to land.
Right. Right. Agreed.
He's so good for not just as a driver, but for the sport as a whole, and you just want to see that continuing on. And he was really good for them. I mean, he brings a lot of attention to their team.
Oh, sure. With all of the positive PR that he brings, and the sheer promotion that he does, that he provides, just, you know, with his personality.
Yep.
We need more of him, right?
So. Yes, yes, we certainly do. Now we're getting a little bit of that with Connor.
True.
The two together are what's hilarious.
Speaking of, I saw a picture of, I'm friends with Connor Daly, like the real Connor Daly, not like his, you know, public persona, right, on Facebook. And, he posted a picture, they're doing, pit stop practice. And it was like in an older car, like a 2013 model, and it was flat black. And it looked sexy as hell, and I made a comment about it, something about, you know, the matte black looks really sharp, but unfortunately it doesn't sell ham, and he replied, he says, yes, Miss Fields not going to be the sponsor this year, so I know that much.
There you go. Huh? Yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Oh, well, I, you know, and it's still, I'm sure a lot of those deals being worked out, but, it's kind of funny. I'm sure he's got all of this Smithfield gear from when they sponsored him at Indianapolis, just kind of sitting there.
Well, so. That's a bummer for, Alphabet Soup team. I hope that they can get the finances in order and, you know, dare I say, I hope gas prices go up a little bit, but
hey, you know what? I am going to be kind of the bad guy here. I would like oil prices to go up, not necessarily gas prices, but they're so closely tied together. Here in the Houston area, when oil prices get as low as they have of late, it affects the job market here.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. There's been like 10,000 jobs a month or something like that. I've been hearing has been dropping out of the gas and oil industry. Yeah, it's not good.
This weekend, as we're talking, it's what, Thursday? So, it's the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. The 50th anniversary of the Rolex 24 hours, I believe. So, Rolex gets a gold watch, I guess.
Again?
Yeah, whatever. Okay. The 24 hours of Daytona is the premier endurance sports car event, in North America, right? Four classes with prototypes, which are the equivalent to the P2 cars in World Endurance Challenge. The Prototype Challenge, the GT Daytona, and the GT Le Mans classes, which have direct correlation to World Endurance Championship and ultimately right, to be able to race at Le Mans. So,
because they're all GT3 spec now.
They're all GT3 spec. It's actually pretty awesome.
Oh, it's very awesome.
Because the variety at Daytona this year, and damn it, I have a friend who's going to be there.
Jealous.
Yeah, no shit. Let's see. We've got Lamborghini Huracan, and I think we're going through the entry list. You said there was like five on the entry list?
There's five Lamborghini Huracans on the entry list. Five. I don't think I've ever heard of an event that had five Lamborghinis in it, unless it's like some special Lamborghini cup that they have like in Italy or something.
Yeah. BMW M6, Ferrari 458s, Dodge Vipers or SRT Vipers, Porsche 911, Aston Martin.
What's the Ferrari 488 that they're talking about? I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the 488 versus the previous.
It is a different model of Ferrari. I'm not exactly certain what the differences are, but I understand it has not been homologated, at least for use in the IMSA series, but it can run in other series. I'm not exactly certain as far as the reasoning why, though.
Well, I mean, it's actually showing on the list as the 488. That's what I was asking.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I'd have to look into it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, But yeah, GT is where it's at. And in fact, I saw a post. Apparently, they had some practice. I believe it was yesterday, or it may have been earlier today. And it was wet weather practice. And in the GT category, the fastest two cars, as far as lap times, were a Ford GT and a Ferrari.
Oh, bring the battle back, baby.
Oh, man, that's going to be epic. From what I understand, the lap times are actually pretty competitive. So if that's the case...
From practice. Okay, so if we have a practice that's been in the rain, and I believe there's qualifying today and it was still wet, right? What's the weather look like for Saturday?
You know, I haven't had a chance to take a look, so I really do not know. Yeah, it starts Saturday afternoon and goes through the evening and then through the day into the afternoon on Sunday. So unless you're pulling up a weather report, I don't know. I certainly am. That's the pilot in you, isn't it?
Hell yeah. All right, so tonight cloudy, so we get sunny tomorrow. 66, Saturday, 68 degrees, partly cloudy, with Sunday, 72 degree high. So
that's nice.
Yeah, so it'll be a pleasant temperature, but different setup conditions then from what they practiced in and what they ended up qualifying in.
Even though it's not in the forecast, though, this is the coast of Florida, and showers, especially in the late afternoon, are you can almost always expect them. So that's always a possibility as well.
Does say 0% chance, actually, of precipitation so far, but that can change.
Doesn't matter. I mean, that's just part of the coastal weather pattern.
True.
Afternoon showers, all the buildup and moisture in the day in the atmosphere dumps out, but they're usually very brief, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and you're done.
So, right.
I'm not saying that will happen, but it's, you know, that's common. We get them here too. So what to look for? Well, first of all, one of the things about sports car racing, the most invaluable tool is a spotter's guide. And Andy Blackmore does spotter's guides for all of the top end series, including the 24 Hours of Daytona. He does just phenomenal artwork, including very detailed liveries of the cars. Even some of the unusual art car types of liveries that are included, he's able to reproduce those in his spotter guides. They look really good. But not only do you get, you know, the liveries, you know what the car looks like, but you get the drivers, the country of origin, the team, the manufacturer, you know, the engine, what type of car it is. He puts all of that into them. They're really good. So they're downloadable, completely free. Print them out.
That's awesome that they're free. Because, I mean, those are really nice.
Oh, yeah, they're and they're best if you have a color printer.
Just
saying. So, but yeah, he's been doing those for years, and he's a really nice guy. So some drivers of note that you can want to watch for if you are a specifically an IndyCar fan. Some drivers from recent IndyCar series are competing, as they always do. Let's see, Simon Pagenaud is going to be in one of the Corvette Daytona prototypes, number 31. Mikel Elation, whose name is humorously misspelled on the entry list, is in the number 37 BR01 Nissan. Hunter Ray is in one of the Corvette Daytona prototypes, number 90. Both Kanaan and Dixon are going to be in the number 02 Ganassi Riley Daytona prototype. Bourdais and Briscoe are both going to be driving in two different Ford GTs in the GT Le Mans category. And Ray Hall is going to be, just like an IndyCar, he's going to be driving for his dad. In IMSA, dad's team runs BMWs, in this case, M6s. So,
which is great because I like the M6 so much better than the Z4 as they were running before.
Oh, I
The
agree.
Z4s were ugly.
They looked like a running shoe, didn't they?
They did. That's a very good analogy. Yeah, I was not a fan. So yeah, these look much better and be exciting to see. And actually, they got a new livery on them that looks pretty badass. That'll glow
that
in the
sexy?
Dark, right?
Well, it not glow in the dark, but it's a reflective paint, and it's like this geometric pattern over the entire body of the car, but some of the reflective pattern is red and blue, and when it's at night and you know it's reflecting light off of it, it looks like the blue and red stripes of the M series logo.
Excellent. I'm excited to see that because yeah, that's our transition to a new car for them. I'm hoping
right.
that it's an improvement.
Their second car has a livery. It's got a panel where it's got images of older BMW racers, like championship winning race cars, like GT cars, Formula One cars when they were involved in Formula One and that sort of thing. Not as eye popping as their geometric design, but still very cool looking as well.
Well. Yeah. There's always just so much to watch that's going on with the 24 hours. One thing I'm kind of wondering, though, is I'm not a fan of the Daytona prototypes, never have been.
Proto Turtles?
Yeah, they're horrible looking.
Agreed. They sound.
But they've always had kind of mixed in with there some of these. What Mazda's got their kind of prototype thing in there. You've got. Trying to make some of those, was it the Ligier, or Ligier, or however you say it,
Ligier.
Trying to also be in that, able to compete with those cars. They've been trying to do balance of performance stuff to try and make that work. Have they done any changes leading up to this 24 hours? The new year?
They have, but you have to understand, they also make changes in balance of performance pretty much race to race. The thing about Daytona specifically is it favors the Daytona prototypes with their, the very, most of them have a very grunty V8. That's what they were originally designed to run. And they have, for the most part, a higher top speed, which, I mean, let's be honest, that's a benefit at Daytona because there's so much of the circuit that's run wide open, especially going
sure.
around the banking and whatnot. So most of the BOP changes are pretty minor.
Okay.
Like Nissan, the Nissan BR01 has to be 10 kilograms lighter. Little bit of a fuel change. The Delta Wing has to get a little bit heavier, by 5 kilograms. I mean, we're talking very slight adjustments here.
Okay.
No changes to the prototype. What I am seeing, though, is that all of the, at least in the prototype category, all of the changes are being made to afford a little bit more power to, to the vehicle or something to really try to allow them to be more competitive with the Daytona prototypes. So hopefully they will be because, I mean, they're not called Daytona prototypes for a reason. I'm just saying. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. It'll definitely be interesting to see how it pans out. I'm hoping to see the Delta Wing actually perform better than it has and not blow a gearbox. That's always been its problem.
Yeah.
I like to see a variety of cars in there, and I guess that's one of my problems is the DPs all are exactly the same, just different. Oh wait, the headlights look a little bit more like a Corvette on that one. That's about it, you know.
Well,
But
you know, with the new the Ford, I guess they run an EcoBoost in one of them. At least that allowed you some differentiation as far as engine notes. Even before everything was a V8, it was a sh Chevy V8, it was a Ford V8, it was a I think they were running BMW V8s, but they were all a V8, which they sound great, but they're all very similar. It's a very grunty kind of sound.
Versus the GT cars where it's all over the map.
Oh, sure.
You got V10s, you got turbo sixes, you got, yeah, all kinds of stuff.
So, but yeah, they're honestly, as a fan, I kind of want to see DPs go away. In favor of more of a quote unquote true sports car. But I also understand and appreciate the theory behind the Daytona prototypes. It's a comparatively inexpensive tube framed car with a production based engine that gives a lot of grunt.
Oh,
So
so it's a NASCAR.
essentially, a
Right.
NASCAR sports car. That is kind of the idea,
Exactly.
but I mean, I can appreciate them for what they are, if not a true sports car based on.
Well, it's not even just that. I guess to me, it takes away from the term prototype. To me,
True.
it's they're not prototyping anything. What they're really doing is they're a spec series is what they are. I mean, they need to get away from even the name prototype. When it first came out as an idea, I'm sure it was, but it is far from a prototype.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's prototype is definitely a misnomer with those cars, but so eh.
So, are we going to end up seeing accidental too long of a driving for the young gosh, who am I thinking? Wayne Taylor racing kids and having to pull into the pits at the last minute and switch drivers?
Oh Lord, I hope not, man.
That was terrible.
Oh, that made you cry. They actually have a pretty stellar lineup. In addition to the two Taylor brothers, they also have Max Angelelli and Rubens Barrichello in their car.
Ooh, Barrichello back in a car.
Yeah.
That'll be
So,
interesting. Old man showed those kids up.
well, apparently, Barrichello and Angelelli are close friends. So, and Angelelli's driven for Taylor Racing before, so they're pretty, you know, it makes sense. And to get somebody like Barrichello in your car, but will he be able to put up with the hijinks of is it Jordan Taylor, I believe?
Yeah.
Oh man, that guy's funny. He needs a
Both the brothers are
for
pretty humorous.
true, but man, they need a like a reality series or something because they're just hilarious.
Certainly. So, this is going to be where it's going to be. So, I think the biggest challenge is really going to be for those wanting to view this wonderful 24 hours race. Because we're going to have to play hopscotch with our televisions and DVR programming, aren't we?
Again,
Again.
you know, it's it okay. It doesn't look as bad as it not as fragmented as it has. Okay, it's going to start on Saturday. You've got 2 hours, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Believe that's Eastern time. On Fox Sports 1, and then it immediately flips over to Fox Sports 2 for another 6 hours. So you've got a good long chunk of TV broadcast, which I think is really important. But then television goes dark from until 7 a.m. But that's when you can watch online on IMSA TV.
Okay, so they're going to have live streaming. And it's not going to be just a team streaming where you only have one car, one team that you're following. It actually is going to have
Right.
what would be essentially the full coverage. With tracks, with cameras everywhere.
That is, well, I can't say that. I mean, they do go to a skeleton crew typically,
Okay.
in the overnight, but that is what is supposed to happen. Now, what happened last year is when Fox went dark for the TV broadcast, the North American, if you were logging in or connecting from a North American IP address, you're supposed to be able to get to IMSA.TV to be able to stream from that point. Well, that didn't happen, apparently not right away, anyway. So there was a lot of consternation, and well, of course, I've got a good group of friends that'll hook me up with bootleg streams for whatever race I want to watch.
Right.
So, it didn't necessarily hurt me. It might have tested my ad blocker, but that's okay. I hope that doesn't happen again this year because that was really poor. The other thing that they did last year is they broke up the coverage at the end. So it was, I think it was like an hour of coverage or 30 minutes of coverage until the checkered flag, which was just ridiculous. And then shortly after the checkered flag, they cut off to some other programming, which was equally as ridiculous. But for Sunday, for the conclusion, they've got an hour of coverage on Fox Sports 1, 7 to 8 a.m., another hour and a half from 8 to 9:30 in the morning hours on Fox Sports 2, and then it's dark again and online only until 1 p.m., where you've got another 2 hour of coverage through the checkered flag on Fox Sports 1.
Okay, so not quite as like you're saying, as far as it was before, as far as the little 30-minute thing they had at the end, which is just ridiculous. I remember
Yeah.
that last year.
It's better at the end, but you've got those other little small 1 hour chunks. How much can you get into an endurance race in a 1 hour TV show?
Yeah, certainly. That's the tough part.
You know,
I guess they're wanting to get somebody that they know has a. It's probably going to go to work or something like that on the weekend and get your fill of basically a highlight reel and then head on out. I
One of
don't
the
know.
other th one of the other things about the 24 hours of Daytona TV coverage is that Fox will not be making use of the talents of one Bob Varsha.
Oh.
They have changed their IMSA broadcast, and he is no longer part of that lineup. I think it's Greg Creamer and Brian Till, and I forget who else is going to be a part of it. I don't know what Bob Varsha is going to be doing as far as on air for Fox. My hope is that he's riding out the remainder of whatever contract he has with Fox, and maybe he's going to get the band back together and hook up with Hobbs and Matchett over at NBC to do Formula One again. But he's also getting older, and he may just want to retire.
That's true.
So I don't know.
I don't know. Sportscasters, it takes them a long time to retire, typically.
That's true. That's true.
That said, the best coverage, in my opinion, that I really enjoy listening to is going to be the IMSA radio, though. And they'll
Oh.
be flag to flag, and those guys are awesome.
In addition to, you can either get it through IMSA Radio or through Radio Le Mans. It will be broadcast through both of those channels. It's the same. Who's at John Hyndai and his crew, and they do a really good job. I mean,
And
they
I
know
guess that's what I
sports
meant.
by
It's
sport.
Radio Le Mans. Yeah, it's that crew, and they're just really good. And if you have a phone, I do it with the TuneIn Radio app, which is a great, efficient app that works really well. So while I'm doing other stuff, I can at least follow along.
That's right. And they do a really good job. Now, one of the things about the 24 Hours of Daytona that I think is really cool, it gives teams an opportunity to do a little bit of their self-promotion. We were talking about the BMW liveries. That's one way that that they do that. One of the best at that is Magnus Racing. They did a, I don't know if you've seen it, Mike. If so, you need to. They did a little video talking about their entry into Le Mans this year, but they did it in Lego.
Oh, I'm gonna have to watch that. That sounds great.
Yeah, and they had a bunch of drivers in there that are not only from their team, but from, other other teams. They had little voice cameos there. And they had Lego cars. They did a little Lego Daytona even. It's actually pretty cool.
It's a new.
Magnus Racing is also one of those teams that they do their own stream of Daytona.
Oh, right.
And it's their team, but they're one of the more entertaining groups.
Certainly.
Even on social media, through their website, their press releases, they, I don't know, they just get it, when they're putting out their stuff for the media, they don't take themselves too seriously. They have some fun with it. I really appreciate that from them. So if you get bored of the IMSA TV or the actual TV broadcast, Magnus Racing's team stream, or whatever they're calling it, is always a good offer to a good alternative and good for a laugh. So although during the race it's probably not going to be playing with Legos.
Yeah, probably not.
So that is it. We're just waiting for countdown. Qualifying actually took place today.
Yeah, actually,
And
and this just in, I'm seeing here it looks like Mikhail Ilyushin, the Russian IndyCar driver, just took the pole.
good for him.
And he's in the Mazda, right?
Believe he's in a Nissan.
Oh, is that what it is? He's in the Nissan. Okay.
Let's
There it is. Yeah, the BR01. Nissan. Yep. So that's interesting. That actually was not something I necessarily expected, one of the true prototype looking vehicles, being a pole sitter over the DPs. Dun dun dun. But it was in the wet, and those cars do generate more downforce, which would probably be an advantage.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm trying to pull up, here we go, schedule and results.
What's really cool is to see Mikhail Lushin, that we saw how quick he could be before he got hurt, in IndyCar. He actually did really, really well. And he was talking about coming back to IndyCar. Obviously, he hasn't lost the skill.
So, because of the wet weather qualifying, it actually had GT cars coming out on top. And we had one of the Corvettes and one of the BMWs, and then another Corvette. Three GT cars at the top of the podium. The fastest prototype was, it looks like it was one of the Rileys. BMW Riley. And that was back in sixth place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, just having all that horsepower doesn't necessarily make it the best design for those wet conditions and whatever setup they had on the car. I mean, obviously it'll all be different when it's dry, on the race weekend.
Well, and there's a lot of I'm sure there's a lot of call for, especially the prototypes, to be able to to save their equipment, because they're going to be have higher pace during the race. Especially over the longer duration. So not performing as well in qualifying may not be a big deal. But however, in qualifying, what I don't see up there at the pointy end is I'm not seeing either a Ferrari or a Ford GT, which is unfortunate, but I'm sure those battles will play out over the course of the race.
Yeah, I mean that's the deal about the, long endurance stuff. It's all about what takes place over the course of the race, and it's a long one to go. 24 hours is a long, long time to have a lot of changes.
Yeah. I'm actually.
I'm just fascinated with the fact that they can do things like change the brakes in about 6 minutes or something. I mean
Well, it's a little bit longer than that. It's about 15 minutes. But yeah, they change an entire brake system. And one of the things that they've done is they've come up with ways and made everything as modular and as easy to disconnect and reconnect as they possibly can, for the sole purpose of being able to change them out, because it's faster to do that than it would be to manage your brakes over the course of an endurance race.
Right.
So, hey, more power to them. You know, if make it. Okay. Although, I mean, I got to admit, I think it's fascinating the way they pull the entire rear end assembly out and be able to change it. I've seen them change entire gearboxes over the course of a half an hour. So that just blows my mind. That's so impressive.
Well, that's what they do in the service park at stage rallies. You got a 30-minute clock.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to, you know, it's not. Obviously, during the active racing, everybody else in service at the same time. But it's somewhat similar, you know, in concept. And those guys, again, similar. They make make those changes. It can swap out entire transmissions. They can, suspension changes, all of that stuff. One of my favorite things that I like in stage rally is when they go to Spain and they do the first day on gravel, then they have, I think it's 45 minutes or something like that. Maybe it's an hour. To switch the entire car from gravel mode to tarmac mode, and all of the stuff that they have to swap to get the car, you know, lowered to the ground, the suspension stuff, the transmission's done differently, all of that stuff, and they have like 45 minutes to an hour to do it in. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's a mad thrash to be sure. And with sports car racing, I mean, they have a lot of freedom as far as what they can, you know, change, repair, and in many cases, they'll pull a car back in the garage and, you know, work on it for hours at a time, finally find whatever that little niggling issue is and get it back out on track, because there's a chance they can. The idea of being able to make up a couple of hours over the course of the race is, I mean, that in and of itself is kind of mind-boggling, considering most races are relatively short sprints that you're used to. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when not only are they working on these cars, you know, actively during the race, you know, being, you know, as far as the time being such a factor, it's these things are running hot, you know? So it's,
well, not
only
like that.
You can let the car cool down a little bit and then work on it. You know, these guys are all having to wear like Nomex gloves to get everything done. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then doing it on no sleep. Although I have to say, I prefer the at least as far as the way the timing of the race is, as far as a 24-hour race, I like Le Mans better, because it starts in the morning, you run all day, and then you run at night. And when the dawn comes, you're in that final push, right? Whereas here in Daytona, the sun comes up and you still got to keep going the rest of the day.
So, right.
You know, still what it is. It's still endurance racing, and that's what it's all about. So it's easier to go fast than it is to go fast for 24 hours.
Exactly. Well, my DVR will be set for some of it, and the rest of it I will be listening to IMSA Radio/Radio Le Mans to see what's going on. You know, I don't watch too much of the sports car racing, although I find it much more interesting than some other forms of motorsports racing out there. But this one, the Daytona, it's just a classic. You can't not pay attention.
Well, it's pretty much the start of racing season in North America, right? I mean,
true.
You look at,
for North America, yeah.
You look at the entry list and you see drivers from pretty much every North American series. There's NASCAR drivers in there and IndyCar drivers that are at various stages on the Mazda Road to Indy and that sort of thing. So, and at least at Daytona in North American racing, as soon as this is over, then they get into the speed weeks, you know, NASCAR testing at Daytona leading up into the Daytona 500 too. So, in my mind, this is always what's been the start of racing season, at least road racing season or pavement racing season, I guess. All right, so I know where my you know where your DVR is going to be. I know where mine's going to be. I've got my setup. I think that's about it for this evening. You can have anything else you want to add, Mike?
No, I think that about covers it. Other than there's also the first USA Rally event is going on this weekend, the Snowdrift Rally. You can catch some of the audio from that with Rally America Radio. If you go to Jim Beaver's Down and Dirty Radio Show, you just search Down and Dirty Radio Show online, you'll end up finding it. He'll have links to the Service Park interviews that he'll be doing to cover that. Obviously, no live timing, unfortunately, from Rally America, but it should be actually some of the closest racing there that we've seen in a long time. There's a number of teams that, you know, normally were a little bit lower down from the top guys. Well, most of the top guys have kind of left. They're not at this event, meaning a tighter battle for the overalls, and that's in every class, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, open class as well as super production. So I'll be following that as well as 24 hours at Daytona.
Good luck with that.
We'll make sure that we have a review of it next time we get together.
Oh, definitely, definitely. That and of course, all of your rally coverage. So for tonight, race fans, I am John Olszakowski, a.k.a. John the Race Fan. And for Mike Shaw, a.k.a. Oregon Wings, good night.